I'd like to thank our sponsors, Becky and Avi Katz, who are sponsoring this year this morning in memory of Becky's father, David Grossman, David Ben Menachem Manish, and we hope that his neshama will have an aliyah from our Divrei Torah today. Leil HaSeder, it is very easy for us to lose focus. There are so many beautiful and sweet Divrei Torah. Our children come home from school. Everybody has the things they want to talk about. So many mitzvos halayla. The Vilna Gaon writes that there are over 60 mitzvos that we perform, that we observe throughout the night of the Seder. We have Dalet Kosos, we have the Shechiyanu, Karpas, Matzah, Maror, Haseba, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, Birchas HaMazon, Halel, Netilas Yadayim, so many more. The list goes on and on. Let's zoom out the lens a little bit, and let's focus more broadly on the framework of Leil HaSeder, and maybe a couple of perspectives that we can think about for this year in particular. What I handed out here is something that I find to be extremely meaningful. It was sent to me actually last year, before Pesach, by a friend of mine in Israel by the name of Rina Ariel. If you don't know who she is, Rina is a woman who lives in Kiryat Arba. She had a daughter, Yafa, who was, I think, 12 years old, if I'm not mistaken, who on the last day of school woke up a little bit late because they had a play the night before, and a terrorist came in through the fence and murdered her in cold blood in her bed. If I'm not mistaken, I think her father, Rina's husband, was the first responder who came to his own house to find his daughter and to deal with the terrorist who was there. A very, very difficult story. But Rina sent this to me last year on Erev Pesach, and I actually wrote to her yesterday, and I said it was so meaningful to me, but I think it would be even more powerful this year, and she said, I can't find it because my phone broke, and I don't have a record of all the things that I sent you in the past. I started looking through all of my own WhatsApps, and I found this, and I sent it back to her. And I'm sharing it with you because I think it is something that is a very important perspective. So let's begin with this. Od ma'at, in a few days, kulanu neshev l'leil ha-seder. We will all sit together for the night of the Seder. Niftach Haggadah, we will open up a Haggadah, and everybody has their own favorite Haggadah that they like to use. And in the Haggadah, we will read about the four sons. Nichapes et ha-chacham. We will eagerly look for the wise child. Nikrotz le-tam. We will be very patient with the tam who's sitting at our table. Nit atger meharasha. We will struggle. We will contend with the rasha at the table. Vegam izeh she'enu yodea lishol. And some of us have a child at the table who's an enu yodea lishol. Aval, however, she says, yesh kama mishpachot sheyesh od ben. There are a number of families who have another child, and that is the ben hachamishi. Haben she'enenu yachol lashevet liyado shulchan. That fifth child is the one who is unable to sit with us around the table because hu nirtzach v'hu ne'erag, because he has been murdered, and he can't share the Seder with us. B'kol kach harbe mishpachot ein ben ve'ein bat. In so many families who are going to be coming around the Seder table this year, they are going to be missing that child, not their son, not their daughter, lashevet u'lahargish b'nei chorin. Missing the opportunity to have their child sit with them and feel like a free person, lahargish es hageula v'hashichrur, to feel the sense of redemption. Aval ein ben ve'ein bat rak zikaron. All our families are left with is memories. We don't have that child. Kama horim shkulim nosfu hashana. How many parents, how many bereaved families have been added to that list this year? V'kama yiladim einam, and how many children won't be there this year who were able to be there in previous years? Hayinu smechim lehitmoded im ben tam v'she'enu yodea lish'ol v'afilu im ben harasha. We would be thrilled if we had the opportunity to have that child at our table, even if that child was a ben rasha, even if that child was not living life the way we wanted them to. Rak she'yeh v'rak she'yichyeh. If only we had the opportunity to have that child around the table, whoever they are, we would accept them for who they are. Just to have the chance to have them at our table, aval lanu, but to us, ein ben ve'ein bat. Lachem, kishekulam yoshvim bepesach yafim v'chagigiyim, when you all sit around your table and you celebrate and you commemorate the great holiday of Pesach, Ta'atzru rega, stop for a moment, v'raknasu lahazkir v'lizkor es hashemos. Think about not only the four sons, think about the 400 sons, think about the 4,000 sons. Think about all those sons that are unable to sit around the table with us. And how can we remember, how can we make meaning of these tragedies? Not to depress ourselves. Tinasu lazkir ulechabek. Try to remember, try to envelop your children. Va'az tachzeru lebanim shelachem. And then look around your own table and think about your own family. Ulai lo kulam chachamim, maybe not all of your children are chachamim. Yesh gam temimim v'gam rishayim. Remind yourself, there are different kinds of family members. There are different kinds of children. Not all of them are always going to be doing exactly what their parents imagine them doing. Not all of them live life giving their parents a tremendous amount of nachas. It's not always the way it works. We don't always have the opportunity to chart out the lives for our children. They make choices for themselves. But just remember, you're blessed to have your children sitting around your table. Chavku otam. Ahavu. Love them. Hitge'u bahem. Be proud of them. Because after all, she writes, Heim kayamim. They are alive. They're alive, and they're sitting around your table. And that's a blessing. And I think just to frame what our Leil HaSeder needs to be this year, this is a tremendous opportunity for us to think about not destruction and devastation, but to think about how blessed we are to have those children sitting around our table, to have the opportunity that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us families, He's given us opportunities to sit together with friends. And sometimes things are imperfect and relationships are complicated. But to have the opportunity to just realize we are blessed. Heim kayamim. The mere fact that you're sitting around the table with anybody is a blessing. And it's a gift. And it's an opportunity for us on Zman Cheruseinu to think about that. In the last parak of Maseches Pesachim, the Mishnah speaks about the proper nusach in which we are supposed to conclude Magid. As we know, the centerpiece of the entire evening is Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, as we tell the story, and we try to recount everything that happened way back when. So the Gemara says in Maseches Pesachim Kuf Tazayin that we end off that story of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim with a bracha. Asher ga'alanu v'ga'ala savoseinu mi'mitzrayim. It's a bracha that we're all familiar with. We say it, every Haggadah has it. But when you think about it, the Gemara actually has a discussion of how that bracha, how that blessing evolved, how it came to be the way we have it in the Haggadah. And it's so touching, it's so moving, it's so meaningful when you read through the words of that bracha. So let's read together what the Mishnah tells us we're supposed to say. Lefichach anachnu chayavim lahodos lahalel l'shabeach l'foyer l'romeim l'hader l'varech l'aleu l'kales. We take this opportunity on Leil HaSeder to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to thank the Ribono Shel Olam, to express our gratitude to Him. To the one, to the entity, who did all of these miracles for us. And maybe it's hard to connect to the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Happened a long time ago. And it's hard to imagine what those miracles actually felt like, what they look like. Think about the miracle of this week. Think about the miracle of this week. It's concerning me that I think this just went like, yeah, we have a really strong Israeli Defense Forces. Coalition got together. Everything worked out. Everybody was in the safe room. Sirens went off when they were supposed to. You missed everything. My sister told me, if you went to sleep Matzah Shabbos at 10:30, some people do such things. If you went to sleep this Matzah Shabbos at 10:30 and you woke up at 6:45, you slept through the whole thing. For me, it's almost a metaphor. You know what it means? It means you could sleep through the Geula. You can sleep through the whole thing. You miss everything. You don't even realize what the threat was. You don't even understand what the Yeshua is either, what the salvation is on the other end. Do you understand statistically how impossible and improbable the outcome of Matzah Shabbos actually is. We're talking about a regime that has been threatening to destroy Israel for the last who knows how many years. The entire world has been terrified of this threat. Of course, Israel has been, but it's spilled over to other countries as well. Powerful countries like the United States of America. Is it in any likelihood that 300 missiles should be fired and be taken down with precision? What's the likelihood of that? What's the statistic of that actually happening? Just think about it. And we say, the Israeli Defense Force is really amazing. The Air Force is unbelievable. Sorry to tell all of you, I don't know if you remember, on October 7th, the Israeli Defense Forces failed us miserably. Why? I don't know. But that could have happened again. This past Matzah Shabbos, that could have easily happened. Barring a great miracle, things like this don't happen. They just don't happen. And we live through it. And we experienced it. So when you sit down to Leil HaSeder this year and you ask yourself, what does it mean to live through the Makos? What does it mean to live through Yetzias Mitzrayim? What does it mean to live through a time of miracles? We are living through that time. The Rambam writes, Chayev Adam leharos es atzmo ki ilu hu yatsa ata mishibud Mitzrayim. The Rambam says we all have to feel as if we have left now and we are experiencing now the great miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's hard to do that. I think it was hard to do that from the year 1950 until the year 2020. But look what we've experienced. Is the Iron Dome any less of a miracle than Kriyas Yamsuf? Is it? Has anyone here ever seen the research before the Iron Dome was created? How the nuclear scientists all over the world said, there is no way that this is actually going to work. They didn't believe it. You know that the United States has funded the Iron Dome and doesn't have one themselves? Does that make sense to you? Not really. Think about the miracles. We are living through miracles. You don't have to use your imagination to say, let me bring myself back to the days of Yetzias Mitzrayim to understand what miraculous times are all about. You're living it. Leil HaSeder is the opportunity to realize you're living those miracles, just like the Jewish people did in the days of Yetzias Mitzrayim. We are living those miracles, if not greater. The threat is greater. The mass destruction is much easier today than it ever was. And look at us. Bayamim ahem bazman hazeh. So you come to the end of Magid and you say this tefillah, L'misha asa la'avoseinu v'lanu, you thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for those miracles that happened to our forefathers and to us. Es kalanisim ha'eila hotziyana mi'avdus l'cheiris mi'yagon l'simcha. God has taken us out from anguish to days of delight. Who could have imagined that there would be a miraculous rescue of anybody from the clutches of Hamas? You've heard the story in this community. You know what that's about. What is the likelihood that that would actually happen? But you know what? We saw it. We didn't just see it. You all experienced it. You met that person who's a walking miracle. You heard directly from him what it means to live through a great miracle. V'chahena, v'chahena. Me'ev al Yom Tov. The Ribbono Shel Olam has taken us in different periods of Jewish history from mourning to celebration. Me'afela li'or gadol. From darkness and devastation to Or Gadol, Mishibu L'Geula, and therefore V'Nomar L'Fanav Haleluka, and therefore we need to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we need to praise Him, and that is the way the Mishnah formulates the text of the end of Magid. Along comes Rabbi Tarfon, one of the Tanoim, and he says, you have to say, Asher Ga'alanu B'Ga'alas Avoseinu Mimitzrayim. You have to say, we thank you for taking us out of Egypt. And that's the way we formulate the tefillah at the end of Magid. Along comes Rabbi Akiva, and he says, no, you can't just say the paragraph the way it is. We need to add an extra line to this paragraph as well. Along comes Rabbi Akiva, and he says, no, Kein Hashem Elokeinu yagi'enu lemoadim v'lirgalim acherim habayim likrasenu l'shalom. Smeichem bevinyan yirecha v'sasim ba'avodasecha v'nochal sham min hapsachim min hazvachim. Baruch atah Hashem ga'al Yisrael. Comes Rabbi Akiva and he says, it's not good enough to talk about what happened in the days of Yitzias Mitzrayim. It's not good enough to focus on the miracles of Yitzias Mitzrayim or all the makos. We need to talk about our anticipation, our yearning for Geula, for Binyan Beis Hamikdash. And without that, there's something very lacking to the end of Maggid. Now, sounds like a rather innocuous dispute. What should we say? What should we add in? What should we take out? But the truth is, this edition of Rabbi Akiva has tremendous significance to our discussion, and it's a very important theme for the entire Leil HaSeder. In order to understand and appreciate it, let's just give a little bit of context, a little bit of background, from a number of Ma'amari Chazal that will help us appreciate what it is that Rabbi Akiva infuses into our Seder. Rabbi Akiva, the Medrash says, was one of four Jewish personalities that lived a life of 120 years. The first, as we know, was Moshe Rabbeinu. Medrash says after Moshe Rabbeinu was Hillel HaZaken, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, in a certain sense, lived a life of tremendous achievement, of unbelievable fulfillment and accomplishment. Particularly relevant for us this year is that Rabbi Akiva lived through the generation of Churban Beis Hamikdash. Rabbi Akiva lived at a time that was total devastation and destruction. For anyone here who's been to Kfar Aza or Be'eri or any of the communities in the south, you understand a little bit about what total destruction actually means, but it pales in comparison to Churban Beis Hamikdash. Sometimes we have the mistaken impression of what Churban Beis Hamikdash actually means. You think it means a building was destroyed in camp in the summertime. On Tisha B'Av, sometimes they take a building and they burn it, whatever everybody watches. That's not Churban Beis Hamikdash. That's one component of Churban Beis Hamikdash. If you look in the Gemara Maseches Gittin, where it outlines the story and gives us the details, the Gemara says there were millions of Jews who were slaughtered at the time of Churban Beis Hamikdash. One piece of it was that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. And think about it. When you go to the communities in the south, those are just communities that were destroyed. What we're describing here, Yerushalayim's destruction, is the capital of the entire country. So imagine to yourself for a moment, Washington, D.C., and everything that that represents for the history of the United States. Imagine if there was, God forbid, a nuclear bomb that came anywhere, but literally just blew out the entire Washington, D.C., and it no longer existed. Aside from people being slaughtered and murdered and pillaged everywhere across the country. That's what Churban Beis Hamikdash was. We talk about the Jews going into exile. Do you realize there were millions of Jews who were murdered? And the leftovers, the She'eris HaPleita, who weren't killed, were the ones who made it into exile. They were lucky. But everybody else was killed. Everybody else lived through this. And Rabbi Akiva is the leader of that generation. Can you imagine? I don't know if anyone in the room has felt depressed at any time from October 7th till now, I assume. Anybody's felt despondent or despair? Is the United States going to help us? Are they not going to help us? Who knows? Back and forth, your emotions are all over the place. You feel hopeless. You feel dejected. You don't know what's wrong with our world. People can't see right from wrong anymore. This is such a black and white issue. People don't understand it. How can this be? Rabbi Akiva understood, as the leader of that generation, that he had a job. Rabbi Akiva had a job of not depressing people, but of trying to lift them up, to try to make them see something positive, to try to give some optimism. I took it very much to heart. Somebody in shul came to me, nothing to do with this situation. He came to me a year or two ago. Forgot what he was even about. There was something terrible going on, and I must have spoken about it. And he said, I'm really disappointed. I said, why? He said, because we all read the same newspaper you read. And for you to get up and just remind us of how upset we are about what we read, That's not your job. He's supposed to give us a better perspective than what we read. You didn't help us. And I took it very much to heart. He's not always 100% correct. Sometimes you need to talk about the facts. But it's a good point. What is the job of someone who's in a leadership position? To make people feel worse about what's going on? To make them feel more depressed and more despondent, more helpless? Then what are you doing? What are you providing them with? Rabbi Akiva understood, I need to have a vision. I need to give people perspective. And for that, when you're living through a thick cloud of smoke, there's somebody who needs to come and show you that there is something outside of this cloud that we're living in. So the Gemara tells us in Maseches Makos Daf Chaf Dalet two very important stories. Number one, says the Gemara, there were a number of Tanaim who were traveling together, and in a distance far away they hear Kol Hamona Shel Romi. They hear a lot of commotion from Rome. Miles away they heard this. And the Gemara says that all the Tanaim began to cry, and they were so distressed, they were so disappointed. How can it be that God allows these terrible people, these Romans, who ravaged Yerushalayim, who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, who have destroyed the Jewish people? How does God allow them to have such celebration? God doesn't see what's going on. And the Gemara says they all began to cry and they were so upset. And Rabbi Akiva Masachik. And Rabbi Akiva takes it in stride. I don't know that it means he was laughing. I think it means he wasn't upset. I recently was with a family who lost a family member. And it was a very great tragedy. And one of the family members couldn't stop smiling. And I just thought it was extremely inappropriate. It's strange. And this person came over and said, I know it looks strange. I didn't say anything. I know it looks strange, but just the way I am, when I go through something very upsetting and very traumatic, instead of crying, I just smile. So some people are like that. But it feels uncomfortable. Of course, they don't mean to make light of the situation, but it's like such an inappropriate response. To everybody around, they just think it's strange. So Rabbi Akiva's friends all turn to him and wonder, here we are crying over the successes of Rome, and you think it's funny? And you think this is okay? And Rabbi Akiva turns to them and he says, let me share you my perspective. Let me tell you what I see here. I see there's a nation that has done terrible things, that has done everything against the wishes of God himself, and yet the Ribono Shel Olam allows them to be happy. Can you imagine how the Ribono Shel Olam is going to give us happiness at some point? Le'osei Ritzono, to those who actually follow his ways, to those who actually follow in the tradition of what God expects them to be doing in the world? Don't you believe that if this is the way God allows these people to behave and allows these people to live, don't you imagine that there's going to be something good on the other side for all of us? Rabbi Akiva says, that's the way I interpret this. That's the way I see it. And then the Gemara shares another story. Shortly thereafter, the Gemara tells us that this group of Tanaim was traveling to Yerushalayim for the first time. And they come to Har HaTzofim. Har HaTzofim used to mean you could see into the Har HaBayis from Har HaTzofim. You were able to see all the mountains of Yerushalayim from there. And the Gemara says, once they got to Har HaTzofim, Karu Bigdeyam, they all tore their garments. They all ripped Kriya. We used to stand here and we used to see the towering Beis HaMikdash. We used to see millions of Jews who were here. We used to see an inhabited city, and now we see destruction and devastation. Now we see everything is burnt. Now we see Churban. And they all rip Kriya, which is appropriate. And says the Gemara, Rabbi Akiva Masachik. Once again, Rabbi Akiva seems to have this very inappropriate reaction. And his friends say to him, there are animals roaming around the Har HaBayis. Instead of sacrifices, instead of karbanos being offered there, and you don't seem to care. And along comes Rabbi Akiva and he says, you're right. But let me tell you. You understand that all of this was part of the prophecy of the Nevi'im. All of the Nevi'im described this to us. And it all came true. And it all came true. So guess what? Let's look at the next passages in the Nevi'im and let's see what else the Navi told us. The Navi also said that there's going to be destruction in Yerushalayim. Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. Everything is going to be in a state of churban. But the Navi then said, Od Yeshu Zakenim Uzakenos Berachovos Yerushalayim. Urachovos Ha'ir Yimalu Yiladim Yilados Mesachkim Berachovos Seha. The Navi also told us that there are going to be elderly people who are going to come back. Yerushalayim is going to be regentrified. There are going to be children playing in the streets. Do you not see this today? All of the words of all of the Nevi'im coming true? Don't you see it? You walk through the old city of Yerushalayim today and you see those children outside the Zilberman Yeshiva and you get hit by the soccer ball as they're playing outside. Can there be a bigger blessing than that? The words of the Nevi'im are alive. Rabbi Akiva says, if you see with your own eyes that the first part of the prophecy came true, why don't you at least go further and realize the second part is also going to come true? And there will be a future for the Jewish people. And we are going to have the opportunity to come back and rebuild Yerushalayim. To which his friends turn to him and say, Akiva nichamtanu, you have comforted us, you've given us perspective. You've taught us that there is something positive in all this destruction and devastation. We have something to look forward to. Now the Maharshan, that Gemara asks, yes, it's true, Rabbi Akiva, very nice sentiment, very sweet. But in the end of the day, we know the halacha is, when you see devastation, you're supposed to rip kriya. So all your friends rip kriya. What was with you? And the Maharshan says he did rip kriya. He did. He did tear his garments. But in doing so, he even was able to see something positive while doing that at the same time. Just think for a moment about the life experiences of Rabbi Akiva. One of the periods of our calendaric year that Rabbi Akiva is probably the most prominent figure of is the period of Sfiras HaOmer. So what happened during Sfiras HaOmer? We know that we observe Avelos so many years later. For the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. What's the story of Talmidei Rabbi Akiva? Look at the bottom of the page, says the Gemara, Shneim Eser Elef Zugim Talmidim Hayulo LeRabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 students. I remember, feels like a very long time ago, when we were dealing with COVID right before Pesach, at the height and the intensity of it. Between myself and Rabbi Axelrod, just in the course of 1 month, I think, together we went to a combined over 50 levayas. And we thought that was, I mean, it is. It's horrific. It's horrible. Can you imagine Rabbi Akiva for a minute? Talking about in the span of 6 weeks, you have 24,000 people died. Just to put it in context, it means Rabbi Akiva was attending 300 funerals a day. And these weren't funerals of people who he had no relationship with. These are 300 funerals a day of people who he invested his entire life to build. His students and their families. Says the Gemara, this destruction spanned the entire country. It was Migivas Vad Antifaras. It was from the north to the south. Vikula Mesu B'Perek Echad. And they all perished in one time period. V'haya Ha'olam Shamim. And the world was empty. There was a vacuum. There was a void. You cannot ignore the fact that 24,000 students just died. Imagine thousands of orphans. Tens of thousands of orphans. Just think about that for a minute. Who's taking care of them? Can you imagine the sense of failure and defeat that Rabbi Akiva must have felt? His whole world just imploded. He'd spent his entire life building something up, and the whole thing was lost in 6 weeks. Think about Lahavdil Elef Alfei Havdalos, because you can't compare money to people's lives. But those who invested their entire life savings in Madoff, and in 1 second, they lost it all. I spent my whole life building this up so that I can be comfortable after I retire. And everything's gone. You understand what that felt like for them. We've seen the interviews of what people shared about the psychological trauma they had to go through when they found out and when they tried to rebound from that experience, never to see all of that again. Imagine if that was actually people's lives. Imagine if that was your whole life's mission, your whole life's work, building to this. And it's all gone in 6 weeks. That was Rabbi Akiva, a citadel of Torah, totally destroyed. But here's what's amazing. The Gemara says, listen what Rabbi Akiva does. Ad Sheba Eitzel Rabbasenu Shebedarom. If I was Rabbi Akiva, I would bury my head in shame, in frustration. And I would say, I'm the biggest failure. Look what just happened. Along comes Rabbi Akiva the next day, at Shabbat, Eitzel, Rabbosenu, Shabbadar, and Rabbi Akiva traveled the entire length and breadth of the country of Israel and tried to find new students to start over with. And says the Gemara, he comes to the south and he identifies five students. Vehem heim he'amidu Torah Shah, Osa Shah. They are the ones who are responsible for the complete restoration of Torah as we know it today. Torah Shebaal Peh, as we know it, is only because of those five students. They are the five most prominent Tanoim that are quoted in every Masechta of Mishnayos. Can you imagine the resolve of Rabbi Akiva to see through this tremendous cloud, this overwhelming darkness, and to search around the entire country to see, where am I going to find light? Who can I rebuild with? Who's it going to be? And he does it, and he's successful. And he's determined, and he's firm. Reb Tarfon, one of the contemporaries of Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara tells us in Meseches Kiddushin that Reb Tarfon once said a line about Rabbi Akiva, Kol haporesh mimenu kiporesh min hachayim. Anyone who doesn't have a relationship with Rabbi Akiva, it's as if they're not alive. And it could mean a lot of different things, but I think maybe it means living at a time like this, living through such destruction, it's a lifeline for you. You know, sometimes you have a person who's going through real great difficulty and they turn to you and say, you're a lifeline. When you text me, when you call me, when you reach out, when I have a Shabbos meal at your home, it's everything to me. It makes me forget whatever it is that I'm dealing with, all the problems that I need to overcome. You give me a perspective. And Reb Tarfon said that about his friend Rabbi Akiva, Kol haporesh mimenu kiporesh min hachayim. If I don't have Rabbi Akiva living through a time like this, of such intense destruction, of such horrible reality, then I can't live, I can't survive. How can I get through all of this? That's the way people felt about him. In fact, after Rabbi Akiva passed away, the Medrash tells us a story. The Medrash says that Nichnuso kol chachmei ador leUsha. All of the chachmei ador came into Usha, and at the time there was such persecution, massacres after Rabbi Akiva's demise, such oppression. And the Gemara says they all came to Ziknei HaGalil v'Yamru. They all came to Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Elai and they said, what are we going to do? Look how much destruction there is. And the Gemara says he opens up an opportunity, and he says, Kol Misha rotza lavo v'yilmod, yavo v'yilmod. Whoever wants to come and join us should come. We're rebuilding. We're moving forward. Is it a coincidence that that was Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Elai, one of the star students of Rabbi Akiva? Who else are people going to turn to when they live through a time like that? We turn to the students of Rabbi Akiva who have been through this before, who know how to rebound appropriately. So you look at the very beginning of Maggid. You ever wonder? We start off Maggid with such a strange story that seems not to really add any meaning to our Seder. Ma'isa, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, five Tanoim were sitting together in Bnei Brak. And they were having a Seder. If I would take out their names, I could have put in anybody's names from the last 2,000 years. I could have put, there were five people sitting around in Poland, five people sitting around in Warsaw, five people sitting around in Russia, five people sitting around in Tveria. or in the United States. What is significant about the fact that the Tannaim were sitting around? And what does it add to the Seder? Question number one. Question number two, what were they doing in Bnei Brak, and why is that significant? Or is that just so happens that that's where they were? And here's question number three. The Gemara tells us it's never good to be lazy. Being lazy is not a good character trait. You don't get things done. However, Rabbi Elazar, the great Rabbi Elazar, the Tana said, "Mishabeach ani es ha'atzlanim." There's one time a year when I say, it's good to be lazy. The lazy people are right. When is that? That is on the Yamim Tovim. Why is it good to be lazy on the Yamim Tovim? Well, said Rabbi Elazar, there are some people who have a custom to leave their families for Yom Tov. They go to Uman, they go here, they travel there, wherever it may be. And Rabbi Elazar says, that's not appropriate. You should be with your family on Yom Tov. You belong home. You belong with your wife, you belong with your children, you belong with your family. That's where you're supposed to be. So if the reason you're not going away for Yom Tov is simply because you're lazy, then good. Your laziness pays off once a year. It's good to be lazy once in a while and stay home for Yom Tov. That's where you belong. Don't run away. That's where you're supposed to be. So Rabbi Elazar is the one who said he never wanted his students coming to him for Yom Tov, even though many students clamor to be by their teachers for Yom Tov. They want to see how do they experience the Seder and what does their sukkah look like and how do they shake the lulav and all these different things. Rabbi Elazar said, "Mishabeach ani es ha'atzlanim." I praise those students who stay home. They should stay home. They should be with their families. Okay. Well, Rabbi Elazar, guess what? We have a story in the Haggadah Shel Pesach in every single one of our homes. We have a story in which it tells us that you left your family for Yom Tov and you went to Bnei Brak for the Seder. So maybe you can explain that to us. You, Rabbi Elazar, of all people, how did you leave your house? And what were you doing in Bnei Brak? So the Sfasemis writes his interpretation, Margalius Ayam writes his own interpretation, where he writes, really, they were going on a political mission, they had to go overseas, and then they came into the port of Yafo, and it was very close to Pesach. They didn't have a chance to all travel back to their own respective homes. Rabbi Akiva lived in Bnei Brak, and he was the closest one to the port. So what are we going to do? We all got stuck by Rabbi Akiva's house for Yom Tov. Okay, an interpretation. It's an interpretation. Rabbi Mordechai Kalbach from Yerushalayim once told me a very different understanding, and he said, perhaps this story of all the Tannaim was the year of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Can you imagine? The previous summer, Tisha B'Av, the entire Jewish people were destroyed. Beis HaMikdash goes up in flames. Everyone goes into exile. There are a couple of Jews who are left scattered about in Israel, not knowing what to do with themselves. A couple of months go by, they're trying to get over the trauma, not so easy. Everyone's trying to figure out, what are we going to do? Where are we going to be? Everyone's in exile, we're stuck behind here. We don't know, are we also going to be exiled? Are we going to be murdered? Nobody knows what's coming. And then, enter Chodesh Nisan. And then comes Zman Cheruseinu. And you open up the Haggadah and it says how everybody should feel. Chayev Adam Laharus Asatzmo Kihilu Yatsami Mitzrayim. I should feel a sense of Cheirus. I should feel a sense of freedom. Is it possible to feel a sense of freedom now? I'm not free. I'm part of an enslaved nation once again. I'm part of a people that just went through such churban. Can you imagine the sense of despair that the Jewish people were experiencing then? So what does a Jew do when you're supposed to feel Zman Cheruseinu, but you just can't feel it? What do you do if your family went through a terrible tragedy this year, and then you come to Leil HaSeder and you say to yourself, how am I going to experience this? What am I supposed to feel? I'm going to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what? For what happened to my ancestors in Egypt? Look what he's done to me in my life. Look where my life is holding right now. Look what I've been through. I'm going to experience Leil HaSeder? How? There's only one answer. There's only one answer, and that is, if there's anyone who can help us, it's going to be Rabbi Akiva. So all the Tannaim travel away from their homes to spend Yom Tov with Rabbi Akiva. We need to be uplifted. we need to have some positive perspective in all that's going on. And yes, even Rebbe Elazar, who always stays home for Yom Tov, and even though he is the Rebbe, he is the teacher of Rabbi Akiva and much older than him, we all need to find some way for ourselves to connect to positivity when we're living through such a dark time. And there's no other place I would want to be than around the table of Rabbi Akiva, especially in a year like this. The Gemara describes what it was like being in Yerushalayim on Pesach. If you've ever been to Israel for Sukkot, you know a lot of hustle and bustle. It's beautiful, people all over the place. It pales in comparison to what it will be. The Gemara says, Sukkot is one thing, but Pesach, every Jew has to be in the old city of Yerushalayim. Every Jew has to eat the Karban Pesach, and there's a very confined space where you can eat it. Can you imagine millions of Jews? And when we say old city of Yerushalayim, it doesn't mean old city of today. It means a constricted old city of Yerushalayim. So much so, the Gemara says, Halela paka igra, the Gemara says in Pesachim. It felt almost as if like the roofs were going to blow off the buildings because there was such intense hallel being sung everywhere you went in Yerushalayim, everywhere. Every home, every street corner, every place. It felt as if the houses were just going to float away. Can you imagine having that image, that memory, that understanding of millions of Jews standing together in Yerushalayim, offering Karban Pesach, singing together, and then living through a Churban? Is there any place in the world that you would rather be that year than around the table of Rabbi Akiva? And Rabbi Kalbach told me, maybe, that's what Rabbi Akiva means in the bracha that we started with. Yes, we spend Leil HaSeder talking about what happened, and we say, Asher Ge'alanu V'Ga'alas Avosenu Mitzrayim, and we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all those great miracles. Me'afela Li'ar Gadol Mishiba L'Ge'ula, says Rabbi Akiva, that is not enough. You can't stop there. You need to go beyond that. You need to add another line. And what is that line that we all need to say? We need to be positive. There are going to be generations of Jews, says Rabbi Akiva, who are going to live through difficult times. There are people who are going to sit around the Seder table and not know how they can celebrate. They're going to be living through a dark cloud just like I am. What do we tell those Jews? What are they supposed to say? Says Rabbi Akiva, here's the answer. When you sit around the Seder table, it's not good enough to talk about what was. You need to look into the future and say what you hope will be also. Says Rabbi Akiva, your Maggid is incomplete if you don't include a line about Kein Hashem Elokeinu Yagi'enu L'moadim V'lirgalim Acherim Habayim L'krasenu L'shalom Smechem B'vinyan Irecha V'sasim B'avodasecha. Says Rabbi Akiva, you need to look forward into the future. You need to make sure that you think about Geula, that you think about redemption, that you remind your family there's going to be something different than what we're experiencing now. That's a major part of the experience of the Seder. That's what it means to be a Ben Choron, to have the ability to dream and to imagine something much greater than the reality that you see in front of you now. Says Rabbi Akiva, without that, your Seder is incomplete. My father once told me, the Gemara says in the end of Maseches Yuma, a very famous line. Ashreichem Yisrael, how lucky, how blessed the Jewish people are. Lefnei mi atem mitaro, mi mitaro eschem. Who is the one who purifies the Jewish people? Avichem Shabashamayim. The God of the Jews is the one who purifies them, our Father in Heaven. Ma mikvah mitaro esatmeim, just like a mikvah is able to purify somebody who is impure. Af HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitaro es Yisrael, so too the Ribono Shel Olam, God, is able to purify the Jewish people. What is the significance of that statement? Look carefully at the beginning of the statement. Who said it? Amar Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is the one who said it. You know why? My father told me, Rav Soloveitchik once explained, the reason why is because Rabbi Akiva, imagine on Shabbos, you come into your home and you mistakenly turn the lights on. You violate a malacha b'shogeg. So what do? If you live at a time of Beis HaMikdash, you bring a sacrifice to the Beis HaMikdash, you take care of it. Imagine the first Shabbos after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. A Jew walks into his home, turns the lights on, mistakenly, and he says to himself, now I'm going to have to live with this guilt forever. What am I going to do? There's no karbanos, there's no Beis HaMikdash. How am I going to take care of this problem? Imagine what that transition was like. People have to live with this forever. Along comes Rabbi Akiva and he says, no. Ashrechem Yisrael. Lifnei mi atem mitaru mi mitaru eschem. Who do you think purified you when there was a Beis HaMikdash that was here? You think it was the karba? You think it was the kohen? You think it was the building? You think it was the traveling there? It was Avichem Shamashamayim. It was your connection, your relationship with your Father in heaven. And guess what? That relationship is still here even without a Beis HaMikdash. And there is hope even for our generation. Ma mikva mitaras atmeim, afa kadosh baruch hu mitaras Yisrael. Just like a mikvah is able to purify one who is impure, so too the Ribono Shel Olam, who you still have a relationship with, is able to give purity to the Jewish people. And you still are connected with him. On the night of the Seder, we talk about so many difficulties. We remind ourselves of so many painful experiences throughout Jewish history. Ones that are from many, many millennia ago and ones that are more recent. I neglected to say we should be mispallel by the Seder. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu should have rachmanus. I didn't say it because it's my hope that we won't have to. It's my hope that before that time we'll have the opportunity to hear the words, Higi Azman Geulaschem. To hear the words that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ready for us to all be redeemed. But the Chasam Sofer points out, one of the more popular items that we use for maror is chasa. Chasa means lettuce. And the Gemara says you're allowed to use chasa for maror. Says the Chasam Sofer, that is an acronym for Chas Rachmana Alan, which means God had mercy on us. Even when we eat the maror, says the Chasam Sofer, and even when we remind ourselves of all the devastation, we need to be positive. Find something positive. Think about Chas Rachmana Alan, that God has had mercy on us. And we see it. And we experience it. The Gemara says one of the other items that can be used for maror is what we refer to as tamcha. I don't know exactly how to translate it, but tamcha is tuf mem chaf aleph. It's one of the vegetables that the Gemara describes. And he says that that refers to tamid misaprim kivod kale. Even when you eat the maror, tuf mem chaf aleph, tamid misaprim kivod kale, we still continue to sing the praises and to realize the gifts and the brachos. In fact, the Ma'aril, one of the Gedolei Chachmei Ashkenaz, writes, one of the items they used to use was afya, aleph pe yud aleph, and he said, that stands for kel poel yeshuos ata. We think about the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is able to bring us a Yeshua even when we eat the maror, even when we sit through such difficulty. But it's important to have that perspective that things can be positive. There is that possibility in our lives. I think I mentioned before, a number of years ago, I had the opportunity to sit with Natan Sharansky. Natan Sharansky told me the story about one of the early refuseniks, Silva Zalmanson. And we're not going to get into all the details of the story, but basically he said that she was part of a group of, I think, 15 or 18 people who decided that they were going to hijack a plane from the former Soviet Union and they were going to fly it to Israel. And they were working on this plan for about a year and a half or 2 years, and they had a bunch of former pilots who were going to join them, and they had a bunch of technicians and engineers, a whole group of people who were going to do this together. The only thing they didn't realize was that from day one of their planning, the KGB was listening in to all the conversations, and they were following all of these plans. So everybody showed up to the airport that day with the plan all worked out, And they were all arrested before they got anywhere near the plane, and they were all put on trial. At Silva's trial, right before they did the final sentencing, the judge turns to her and says, "Is there anything you'd like to share with us before we sentence you?" She ended up being sentenced to solitary confinement for many, many years. And she turns to all of them and she says, "Yes. To all of you sitting here in the room, I have nothing to share because history will not remember any of you. So there's no reason for me to waste my words on you. But to every Jew all over the world who is watching this trial, I say to you, Im eshkachech Yerushalayim tishkach yemini. And now you can take me away." 8 years later, Natan Sharansky was put on trial for his involvement. And before his sentencing, the judge turns to him and asks him the same question. And he says, "Yes, there is something I'd like to share." And he says the same thing. "To all of you sitting here in the room, I have nothing that I want to share. But to every Jew all over the world, I say, L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim habnuya." So Natan Sharansky told me, "Why is that what we say before we imagine ourselves rotting away in prison for the rest of our lives?" So he told me, "I said it because she said it. I'm not the one who made this up. But why is this? Why was it so powerful to me? Why did I copy her? Why did I say the same thing? And why did she say it?" And he said the reason why is because when you're facing your own mortality, when you're staring death in the face, when you see that your demise may be coming, and when you see so much destruction in front of you, the only thing that gives you some kind of hope is to zoom out the lens a little bit and realize there is something so much larger than myself that is going to live on forever. There is something about our relationship, about our connection to the land of Eretz Yisrael that has been a connection for all eternity and will continue to be. And he said, "When I'm thinking about myself and the prospect of how depressing my life is about to become, what gives me hope is the promise of the Jewish people that's so much larger than me. That Jews at their Seder have been saying, L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim, forever. That at the end of our davening on Yom Kippur, this is what we think about. This is where we want to be. And this is where we will be. Because we're seeing it unfold in front of our eyes." You know, the Rashi on Chumash tells us, V'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim. Only 1/5 of the Jewish people left Egypt. 4/5 of them stayed behind. That means 4/5 of the Jewish people, how tragic, could not connect themselves to the understanding of what it means to be free. Could not relate to the concept of being a free people, of being in a state of geula. What a tragedy that 4/5 of the Jewish people lost out on that experience. But it means that it's not a given. What it means is that it's not obvious that everyone has that opportunity to feel the same. That's what it means. And it's an opportunity for us to make sure we are going to be part of that 1/5 of the Jewish people. Don't allow that mistake to happen again. Realize, geula is a realistic possibility in our lives. Geula is something we look forward to. It's something we think about. And it's something that on Leil HaSeder, Rabbi Akiva encourages all of us. We need to emphasize. We need to remind ourselves of. You can be living through the dark cloud of Rabbi Akiva's life. You can be living through the dark cloud of our experience. All over the world, the anti-Semitism that is raging. The pillaging that happened in Israel on October 7th and since. The terrible isolation that the Jewish people feel all over the world. The hypocrisy, the double standard. The sheker, the lies. We understand all of it. You can be living through all of that, but you have the opportunity to say, Kein Hashem Elokeinu Yagienu. With all of this, the only thing that we think about is that opportunity of redemption, that opportunity of geula. And as I said a few weeks ago, the Pele Yoetz writes, there are so many different ways that we need to prepare for Pesach, but one of the ways that he mentions is we need to believe B'Nisan Asidin Lehigoyel, the same way the Jewish people were redeemed in the original stage of Nisan. It's a possibility for us as well to have the same experience. And we have to believe it. And we have to think about it. I personally think most people are scared of a geula. Maybe I'm wrong. I think people are scared. I was just talking to someone the other day, I should say my wife was, and they were showing her the plans for their construction. And maybe I was inappropriate for getting involved in the conversation, but I said, "You're doing construction now? I don't get it. I just don't get it. Now? Don't you see? Don't you see what's unfolding? I just don't get it." So this woman told me, "Yes, you're right." I spoke to my husband about it, and we said, "We're fine if we lose all of this money." Okay. You're fine if you lose all this money. That's fine. As long as you're going into it with that mindset, do you understand? We're living through geula times. This is what it is. It's real. And the Peleoids writes, we all need to really think about that and understand. Is that a realistic possibility in your life? How will you respond? The Jews in Egypt, it wasn't a given that everybody responded positively to a geula. As miserable as life was for them there, not everybody was able to connect to that reality. We need to make sure we are the people who have the ability to connect to it, who understand what that possibility is for us in our own lives. And Yehi Ratzon Shenizkeh, we should have the opportunity that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should show us the miraculous times of our geula. V'nochal sham min hazvachim u'min hapsachim. We should have the opportunity to have that experience back in Yerushalayim Altila, when Yerushalayim will be rebuilt, when the Jewish people will come back, when we'll have the experience of spending Pesach together and having that ultimate experience that the Gemara describes of Halela Paka Igra, of the Jewish people singing Hallel because they are just so overwhelmed by gratitude, they are so overwhelmed by the experience, and it's almost as if the roofs will fly away because there will be such an intense feeling of gratitude. Halavai, Shenizke. We should have the opportunity to do so. But until then, I wish everyone a Chag Kasher V'Sameach, and I look forward to learning again after Yom Tov.